Although there are unlimited ways to commit the red herring fallacy, two are especially common. The first, called ad baculum, is an appeal to force or threats. Kim commits this fallacy when she argues that if they don't bury the case fast, the mafia will come after them. The second most common form of red herring, called ad misericordiam, is an appeal to pity or guilt. Henry commits this form of the fallacy when he tries to convince Steve to arrest Mark in order to save Dawn. Steve: not so fast. I believe we're getting closer to a true conviction. Here's what else I learned. Dawn and Mark were dating until about a week ago. Henry: aha! I bet Mark shot Cassandra to protect Dawn and win her back. Kim: Henry, if Dawn's father weren't paying you a mint, you'd be able to see that Mark has nothing to do with this murder. He was in Moscow. Henry: Kim, you should not believe everything your client tells you. Mark has obviously charmed your skirt off. Kim: what? That's outrageous. Steve: okay, folks, that's enough. Please follow up on the information I've given you and meet me here again tomorrow. 5. Ad hominem, the fallacy of attacking the person instead of the argument. Argumentation is very demanding. When people become tired, frustrated, or upset, they may resort to low blows. Politicians call this mudslinging. Logicians call it ad hominem, which means against the person. There are four main forms to watch for. Circumstantial ad hominem occurs when someone claims the opponent is biased due to his or her circumstances. Kim commits this form of the fallacy when she accuses Henry of blaming Mark because Dawn's father is paying him a mint. It may be that Henry has a vested interest in casting Mark as the murderer, but this doesn't prove Mark is innocent. Abusive ad hominem occurs when someone insults or belittles the opponent in an effort to win the argument. Henry commits this form of the fallacy when he says Mark charmed Kim's skirt off. This comment is offensively sexist, and it implies that Kim is conducting herself unprofessionally. Poisoning the well is a form of ad hominem, also known as guilt by association. In this case, someone tries to refute the opponent by connecting him or her to something undesirable. For example, to say someone's proposal sounds like Nazi propaganda would be to project the negative judgment most people have about Nazis onto the proposal. Finally, the form of ad hominem known as tu quoque means you did it too. This is where someone accuses the opponent of hypocrisy. For example, suppose Henry accuses Kim of hiding evidence against Mark. It would be an instance of the tu quoque fallacy for Kim to accuse Henry of doing the same thing for Dawn. Kim needs to refute Henry's accusation before launching one of her own. Two wrongs don't make a right. Notice that any of the forms of ad hominem can also be considered red herrings insofar as they function to change the subject. 5 fallacies of presumption. The next 5 fallacies are called fallacies of presumption because the reasoning involved proceeds by assuming the truth of a claim is either false or uncertain. Steve: hello, Kim and Henry. Thanks for coming back. As you may recall, Dawn swears she saw Mark shoot Cassandra. We learned last time, however, that Dawn was buying drugs from Cassandra at the time of the shooting, and that she had a prior relationship with Mark. These two factors give us reason to question her testimony. Henry: but Dawn passed a lie detector test. Kim: that test was clearly faulty. Dawn's a drug addict. All addicts are liars, and they will lie about anything. Didn't you see the news story last week about the guy caught lying repeatedly to his doctor about an injury in order to get Vicodin? 1. Hasty generalization, the fallacy of inferring from some to all. Hasty generalization occurs when one presumes too quickly that there are no significant differences among the members of a group. Kim makes a doubly hasty generalization when she says, All addicts are liars and they will lie about anything. As evidence for this claim, she cites just one addict who lied about just one thing. Most judgments depend on some degree of generalization. Consider the simple statement, "I like movies." Surely not even the most avid movie fan likes every movie ever made. It's understood that general claims admit of exceptions. But generalizing can be dangerous, as is evident in the case of stereotyping. Someone who had problems with a few members of a particular group may be tempted to infer that all members of this group cause problems. This judgment is inaccurate and unfair, since the members of any given group may be quite different from one another. Racism and sexism involve entrenched stereotypes derived from hasty generalizations. Steve.
Listen, you two, I have a question. Do you think Dawn could have shot Cassandra?
Henry.
No way. Dawn is not a violent person.
2. Begging the question. The fallacy of circular reasoning. In this exchange, Steve asks whether Dawn might have shot Cassandra. In so doing, he indicates he thinks Dawn might be a violent person. Henry argues Dawn couldn't have shot Cassandra because she's not violent. But how does Henry know whether or not Dawn is violent? Whether or not Dawn is violent depends on whether or not she shot Cassandra. So Henry's arguing in a circle. Dawn didn't shoot Cassandra because she's not violent, and she's not violent because she didn't shoot Cassandra. Henry shouldn't use the claim that Dawn is not violent as a reason for his conclusion that she didn't shoot Cassandra, because this is the very claim Steve is doubting. A good argument starts from premises the opponent may be willing to accept and shows how those very premises lead to your conclusion. If the opponent accepts the premises, then he or she must accept your conclusion. You can tell an argument begs the question when the reason given for the conclusion is really just another way of saying the same thing as the conclusion. The opponent needs to be given a reason different from the conclusion in order to be persuaded.
Kim.
Yes, Steve, I think Dawn did shoot Cassandra. Look at it this way. It was either Mark or Dawn. But Mark was in Moscow, so it must have been Dawn.
3. False dilemma. The fallacy of reducing a variety of options to just two. Whenever someone tells you you have a choice between just two options, you should always ask yourself whether more possibilities have been left out. In the last chapter, we examined the rule of inference known as disjunctive syllogism. 1. P or Q. 2. Not Q. 3. Therefore P. Although this is a deductively valid argument, the first premise is vulnerable. Are there really just two options? An opponent may object that the argument commits the fallacy of false dilemma. Kim makes this mistake when she assumes the killer was either Mark or Dawn. Why are they the only two possibilities? False dilemma is a fallacy of presumption because it illegitimately assumes that all the other possibilities have been eliminated.
Steve.
What about Dawn's father, Boxer? Could have been him.
Henry.
Hey, that's my client. Why would you accuse him?
Steve.
Well, he stopped by the police station the other day. Right after he left, the hard drive on my computer crashed. It has never crashed before.
4. Post hoc. False cause. The fallacy of assuming that X caused Y simply because X preceded Y. The term post hoc is Latin shorthand for post hoc ergo propter hoc, which means after this, therefore, because of this. Steve may be committing the post hoc fallacy when he suggests that Dawn's father, Boxer, caused his computer to crash. Just because Steve's computer crashed after Boxer was there doesn't mean Boxer did it. On the other hand, it is possible that he did. In order to determine whether or not someone is committing the post hoc fallacy, we need to ask two questions. 1. Is there a plausible explanation for how and why X
caused why?
Some people believe wearing a charm bracelet to a football game can help their team win. This is a clear case of the post hoc fallacy, because there is no plausible way to explain how or why a bracelet could improve a team's performance. If the team wins when the bracelet is present, it will be a coincidence, and the belief in a connection will be nothing but superstition. If Steve can explain how and why a boxer made his computer crash, then we wouldn't accuse him of committing the post hoc fallacy. But there is another important question to ask. 2. Is there a common cause of both X and Y? Suppose your car refuses to start every time you find the cat in the garage. You may be inclined to conclude the cat is somehow causing the malfunction. However, cold, damp weather may be the common cause of the behavior of both the car and the cat. In this case, we would say their behavior is correlated by a common cause. Likewise, suppose Boxer went to the police station because someone crashed his computer. Then it might be reasonable to suspect that whoever crashed Boxer's computer also crashed Steve's. This person would be the common cause of the correlation.
Henry: Steve, by saying my client Boxer is the killer, you're basically saying he's stupid. No intelligent man would hire a private detective to solve a crime he himself committed.
Kim: Sure he would. It makes him look like he has nothing to hide.
Steve: I'll go and pick up Boxer now. You two stay here and join me for the interrogation when I return.
5. Straw man. The fallacy of oversimplifying the opponent's view to make it easy to refute. It can be very difficult to refute an opponent's argument, which may be long, complex, and full of compelling points. As a critical thinker, you have to find a way to deflate it while at the same time taking it seriously. Straw man is an old-fashioned word for a scarecrow. Needless to say, it's easy to knock down a straw man. Even a child can do it. Refuting an opponent's view by oversimplifying it is like knocking down a straw man. By replacing the real target with a fake one, you fail to accomplish your task and leave the impression you're not up to it. Henry commits the straw man fallacy when he accuses Steve of basically saying Boxer is stupid. Steve wasn't saying that at all. He was actually imputing a very clever strategy to Boxer. Watch carefully any time someone uses the phrase, "You're basically saying ... because 9 times out of 10, an oversimplification is forthcoming. The way to avoid straw man is to practice what logicians call the principle of charity. Always interpret your opponent's view in the best possible light. If you give your opponents their due, then your arguments will be more meaningful. Think of it this way. Martial arts practitioners always bow to one another before they pounce. They would never want to make false presumptions about the weakness of their opponent. 5 fallacies of ambiguity. The remaining 5 fallacies are called fallacies of ambiguity because they arise due to confusion over the meaning of words.
Steve: Hello, Kim and Henry. Thanks for waiting for my return. Unfortunately, I found Boxer shot dead at his apartment. Looks like suicide.
Henry:
It must be a setup.
Kim: Henry, your client's dead. That means you can stop defending him now.
1. Is ought. The fallacy of inferring a prescriptive statement from a descriptive statement. In the last chapter, we saw that descriptive statements assert facts, while prescriptive statements assert values. Because of this difference, it is a fallacy to infer prescriptive statements from descriptive statements. Kim probably commits the is-ought fallacy when she suggests Henry should stop defending his client because he's dead. Her argument could be reconstructed as follows. 1. Boxer is a dead client. 2. You should not defend dead clients. 3. You should not defend Boxer. Of course, we can't be critical of Kim for neglecting to spell out her argument in standard form, since this is not expected in spoken arguments.
Moreover, the standard form is valid. So what's the problem?
The problem is it's not clear Kim understands she's making a value judgment. She seems to think that the fact of death automatically releases people from their obligations in the same way that the fact of death automatically causes decay. But release from an obligation is not like decay. As a physical process, decay is a fact. This is why it can be caused by death. Facts can cause facts. Release from an obligation is not a physical process. It's a value judgment. While facts can influence value judgments, they cannot automatically cause them. In most instances of the is-ought fallacy, the speaker doesn't even realize he or she is inferring a value from a fact. This is why the is-ought fallacy can be considered a fallacy of ambiguity.
Steve. By the way, there was a note on the table near Box's body. It said, Mafia rules.
Henry.
See? Wasn't a suicide. Someone from the Mafia killed Boxer and left a note of victory.
Kim. That's not how I interpret the note. I think Boxer wrote it to explain his suicide. He was a member of the Mafia, following Mafia rules about committing suicide to avoid arrest.